Thanks for listening to CarCast on Podcast One.
Hey guys, before we get started, I want to tell you about Dodge. This spring, the Brotherhood of Muscle is looking for new members, and the only way to join is to get behind the wheel of Dodge's only family of all-wheel drive muscle cars. The Dodge Charger, the only muscle car in its class to throw you back in your seat with 300 horsepower and still get 30 miles per gallon. You know, the Dodge Challenger, you know, the Groundhog didn't see its shadow. It heard the rev of the most affordable V8 in its class. And the Dodge Journey, maximize your adventure with the most powerful third-row all-wheel drive vehicle in its class. And certainly the Dodge Durango. Tear through April showers with the most powerful SUV with all-wheel drive availability in its class. Hurry into your Dodge dealership and start your introduction to the Brotherhood of Muscle. Hey guys, welcome to Castrol CarCast. I'm Matt, the moderator, DeAndrea, and here as always, Bill Goldberg. How are you, buddy?
Bill, ho, ho, I'm awake.
Oh man, it's an early morning. We got a lot of work to do today, but it's going to be fantastic episodes. Alistair Weaver from Edmunds.com back in the studio, buddy. Good to see you.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing good. I mean, we keep seeing each other. We keep running into the same events. We were at Lufka Call. We were at a McLaren event the other day, and it's just... it's been fantastic. We've got so much cool stuff to chat about. I kind of want to get into a few things right away. First and foremost is Ford makes a big announcement and says, we're an automaker that doesn't want to make cars anymore. And I was kind of hoping, Alistair, you can shed some light on it, and I'm sure we're going to have some opinions about it as well. But I get it. You know, we like our trucks. We like our SUVs. F-150, they sell a million of those things a year. And, you know, other than the Ford Mustang, which is so iconic, they're going to continue to make that. But what's really going on with Ford with an announcement like this? Are they done with cars for a while?
Well, just actually to go back a step, a couple of weeks earlier, they launched the Focus, the big gala event in Europe, really big news, and they said, this is the best car we have ever produced, ever produced, which is kind of a weird thing to say, because what that's actually saying is every time you launch a new car, that's got to be the best car, otherwise it's not as good as the Focus. Right? So that was odd in itself. And then literally 2 weeks later, they follow it up by saying, actually, we're not selling cars in the U.S., whatsoever anyway.
Yeah, it's the best car we can make for Europe. For US, we have higher standards.
So in the US, you'll get the an active version of the Focus, which is kind of like a bit like a crossover, and then the Mustang, and that's your lot. So no Fusion, no C-Max, no Toro, Fiesta, could go on. But what's kind of strange about this, I was down at Honda last Friday. And
they must be having a party, right?
Oh, those guys are having a massive party.
Yeah, Toyota Camrys and Civics and
everybody.
Everybody's just going to be happy, right?
Because they made a really interesting point that the first car that people buy is not normally an SUV. Nobody goes out and buys a Honda CR-V as your first car. So you get into a car. And then as you get older and your life changes, then you gravitate into different models, partly because of cost, partly because of size and everything else. And I just started pulling some of the statistics. I can ask you a question, actually. So just in the first quarter of this year, how big do you think the compact car sector is? So that's Focus, Civic, that kind of guy. How many cars do you think were sold first quarter of this year in the U.S.?
I mean, I would imagine that it's well into the hundreds of thousands. I imagine like an F-150 is probably the best-selling thing out there, but then probably like Toyota Camry and Honda Civic, somewhere in there. And probably Ford Focus is near the top of that list. So I would imagine there's a couple hundred thousand that they sell of each of those models. But
so total sales for that sector of the market, 465,000 in the first quarter.
For the compact car market across all brands.
Yeah. But what's interesting is when you then look at, I mean, the big problem with the Fords is that they haven't been very good. If the cars are crap, people don't buy them.
Bingo.
Yeah.
And actually, people, they're standing there saying, the Focus is going to be amazing. Oh, but we're not going to sell it now. And so if you look at the figures, this is for the whole of last year. Civic sells 400,000 a year. So you can't sell these cars, but they sell 400,000 a year. And Honda seems pretty happy that it's you know, making decent money on this. Focus, 160,000. So is the problem that Ford just wants out of the car market or can't make a profit? Or is it just actually that the cars historically have not been very good?
Right. But 160,000 is not an insignificant amount.
For sure.
I mean, Ford is a huge company, but You know, and those smaller cars have far less margin in them for profit. You know, F-150s, any of the big SUVs, you know, we're in 2018 right now. If you go to the lot and there's like a brand new F-150 that's a 2017 on the lot, it says 9,000 off sticker. Believe me, they're not losing money off of that, right? They're still making good money. We just don't have the margins in these smaller cars. But the question I had was we have this cafe fleet number that the car companies need to achieve. What that means is the government is saying by some year, I don't know, 2020 or something, the car companies need to hit 25 or 25 something miles per gallon. I'm sure you know. I don't know the exact specs. And what they mean by that is for every F-150 they sell, they have to sell – you know, 3 C-Max or Focus or something else to balance out as an entire company. You need, but this is why a company like BMW owns Mini, right? And this is, you know, this is why some of these companies have multiple brands.
Some offset.
You know, Chrysler picks up Fiat, you know, because they every one of those cars they sell, they'll sell, they're not going to sell 500,000, but if they can sell, you know, 50,000 of those and they all get 35 miles per gallon, that offsets every Ram that they sell. You know,
it's a good point, and it's and I still come back to what I said earlier, not just people. When you start out in life, you want a cheap, economical car. This ticks loads of boxes. They get all the cafe stuff, but also the kind of new human need for cheap, economical transport. So now, do you have to go to Honda? Is Ford basically saying you can buy a Corolla or you can buy a Civic, and then, you know, maybe later in life when you made a bit more money, you can come and buy a Ford? Because what does Ford have that's cheaper? The EcoSport? Have you driven an EcoSport?
No.
No, it doesn't surprise me. No.
Don't ask me that question. See, that's for sure.
It's funny because here's a serious issue is Bill doesn't actually fit in a lot of those cars, right? He's a big dude. It's not like you can't be 6'4 and fit in those cars. You just don't. Your just shoulders are uncomfortable in some of those seats and some of those cars and where they sit. So, you know, for the sake of comedy, yeah, we'll squeeze you in a Miata just to see what happens. You know, but it's not a car for everybody. This is why you roll around in, like, you know, in a truck or an Escalade or even the muscle cars you have. They're big cars these days, you know. I'm sure some of the cars in your collection are tough to get into, except, you know, like a 67 Mustang has a low back seat in it and there's not much to it. It's just enough to hit you on the small of your back.
And positives and negatives with everything. But, you know, for the most part, the collection's tailored towards vehicles that I can get in and out of quite easily.
Yeah.
The Cobra doesn't lend itself to that, but it's like a monkey humping a football going down the road.
Yeah. Luckily, there's no top or anything on it.
But it is what it is.
50% of your body's outside the car. Not that that's safe.
Sacrifice. You
know? Not that that's a safe way to go, but it happens. All right. So do we know if this is going to extend down to some of the other brands that Ford owns? Are they going to make a Lincoln Continental?
This is the big question at the moment. We know Ford needs to get into the EV game. They're hugely behind on that. Lincoln, they've been super quiet. So, yeah. You know, is Lincoln, obviously, we know the Aviator's coming. The Navigator's a big part. You know, huge
they're
going
to sell well. They're going
to
sell well.
Yeah, I mean, they have to be doing well.
Yeah, they have to be doing well. I mean, and actually the thing, and of course, a lot of these cars are all about platform sharing. Mm-hmm. So if you don't do a Ford car, and also in Europe, cars tend to be smaller and everything else. So if you don't do a platform, how do you do a Lincoln? So, yeah, there's a lot of unanswered questions. And it's interesting, when you go back to 2009, when obviously GM and Chrysler went bankrupt, a lot of that was because the strategy was built around big trucks and everything else. If fuel prices suddenly go up for some sort of crisis in the world, fuel prices go up, how quickly can Ford react to that sort of thing? He's always saying, okay, SUVs aren't as gas-guzzling as they once were, and that's absolutely true. But if the market shifts, you know, they haven't got a lot of flexibility.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because as they make this announcement, 3 days later, we have press releases saying we're right now at our highest gas prices in years. You know, if not California, all over.
Yeah.
Right? We're rolling around. It's $4 a gallon out here.
You should try living in England. It's $9 a gallon.
Well, that's why we don't live there.
Yeah, that's
also,
why I moved.
Also, it rains and there's other issues. Yes. And the food is crap.
Streets are skinnier.
Yeah, the streets are skinnier. Although we do love going out to the Goodwood events, so there's that.
That's true. No question.
So what do you think this means for Ford? Because is there – you and I were talking the other day. Is Ford saying – we're just not going to do cars because we want to focus on trucks and SUVs and crossovers? Or are they saying, we're just not hitting anything with our current lineup of cars? Give us some time. We may come out with something new.
Ultimately, what do you think's up their sleeve?
Yeah.
I think it's pretty – they've been pretty hard-nosed about it and saying, you know, we can't build cars cheap enough. We can't make profit out of selling cars. The market is transitioning to SUV. I mean, that's undeniably true. Need to deliver shareholder value, which of course is a hugely important part of their strategy. So, you know, maybe they're right. And we have seen other brands move in this direction, but not in quite such a extreme way. So, you know, history will judge this in 4 or 5 years' time, where they made the right call and they're driving the profits. And, you know, is this just a consumer thing? Does nobody out there actually want to sit in a car anymore? But from enthusiasts like us, of course, no more Fiesta ST, which is a car that I absolutely adore.
Yeah, Focus RS.
No more Focus RS. You know, where is – or Focus ST either.
That they made such a big push for and now
– yeah, they were bringing back the performance side of things as well. But I do see what you're saying, because we had brands that were historically small cars. We had Fiat. We have Mini. And those evolved into four-door Mini Coopers and little crossovers and plumped-up Fiat 500s that are not really that small anymore. So, yeah. I mean, I get where they're going. They're trying to grow their base as well. Maybe they are right. Are the Fiats and Mini Coopers of the world selling a lot more of the fatter version of their cars than they are of the smaller versions? I mean, to be honest with you, I see a hell of a lot more of those Fiat four-door thingies than I do the little Fiat 500.
Well, if you look at the compact SUVs, which CRVs, RAV4, they are selling about 800. So they sell twice as many compact SUVs as you do compact cars. Mm-hmm. And that's just a fact. But, of course, compact SUVs are more expensive. Mm-hmm. But also, as I say, you know, if you're selling hundreds of thousands, if Honda can sell 400,000 a year of the Civic and feel comfortable at that level, then these aren't small numbers. Even if it drops to 300,000, it's still a pretty big number.
So what does that say for Ford's attitude towards brand loyalty?
Well, again, I come back to the point I made earlier. You know, they're actually saying to a lot of people who have grown up before, and if you think of Ford, has always been, you know, I obviously come from Europe, and Ford for me was the American Volkswagen. It was the Americans, people going all the way back to the Model T. It was about building cars for everyone that people could afford and people could get into, and you started to drive and you had that expression of freedom. You bought a Ford. And that's kind of going away.
Yeah. I think the entire concept of that is quickly leaving us.
Yeah. It is the perception that Ford doesn't build that good of a car, or is the perception that Ford is more of a truck and SUV maker?
This is my personal opinion on the car market. I've been around this game for about 20 years. Is if you build a good car, people will come. And it basically is as simple as that. You know, you build a bad car, people don't buy it. You build a good car, people buy it. And it just feels – the timing feels odd in that they've made a big song and dance about the Focus. We – you know, the Fiesta's not coming over. I understand that you can't sell something as small and they're very expensive to produce in the U.S. I get that.
Yeah.
But the Focus is a kind of classic American-sized compact car. If you're going to spend all these billions of dollars developing it, you're going to make a big fuss about it. And then suddenly you're not bringing it, or you're bringing one version of it.
Something's up.
It's you know, and where is the 15? You know, you think about people buying a used car. Where is the $15,000 Ford that's maybe a year or two old, and you could get into a Focus or a Fiesta at that price point, and then you get people into the brand.
Is this going to just end up being taking a Ford Focus platform and putting a 4-inch lift on it and calling it a crossover?
Well, to some extent, that's what modern SUVs are, right?
Right. Yeah. Like, that's kind of where we are. We don't have, like, full-frame chassis, you know, SUVs and stuff, you know, other than our big trucks. Everything is still just a unibody platform of some sort, and everybody's doing it that way.
That's the counter-argument that this is just a car. This is just a car by another means. That is their argument. Yeah. But then, as I say, if you're driven an EcoSport.
Okay, well, maybe part of this was just about reaction, just to see what sort of public reaction and Wall Street reaction they were going to get. And you may not know the answer to this. I didn't get a chance to look this up ahead of time. But how did Wall Street react?
I think, well,
what happened with their stock price when they made this announcement?
I think initially favorably, because I think people, you know, Wall Street chases profit, right? Mm-hmm. And if the profits are in SUVs, and if Ford is saying, it's a bit like when GM sold Opel in Europe. Yeah. You know, if you can make a statement that in the short term, at least, we're going to increase profits by getting rid of these vehicles that aren't making us money, then Wall Street's going to like it. My question is what the medium term is. So
yeah.
Short term, I absolutely get it from a shareholder perspective. Same with GM getting rid of Opel in Europe and all the rest of it. But, you know, it's the medium long term thing. And also, you know, sadly, these companies only become about shareholders. You know, Ford has got to think about what its long term reputation, what its image is, what it represents. And as I say, maybe they're right and we're wrong. Maybe over the next 5-6 years, we'll see these great little SUVs coming out that answer a lot of these questions.
Well, as far as reputation, Ford has built a brand based off of their trucks and their Mustang, right? That's 75% of brand equity, if you will, not necessarily loyalty or value, but that's just what we know. So I guess a question would be, look, I agree with Bill. I think they've got something else in the works. This is a company that basically invented the SUV with the Ford Explorer, right? Maybe they're going to try to pitch something else. Excuse me. I know we've sort of evolved into crossover vehicles as a category, and BMW likes to do a sport utility vehicle or sport active utility or whatever they're calling it. But it really kind of started with the Ford Explorer. So there's not to say that there's going to be something that comes out that they're going to try to create a category, not just a new vehicle, not just, hey, here's a new crossover, here's a new SUV. They're going to try to branded something and create their own new category of vehicle and start pushing some maybe one or two vehicles within that category. That's kind of what I'm feeling like Ford's going to do. And they may have a big enough brand to pull that off.
We know EVs is going to be a key push for them, and that rather than just build an electric version of a Focus, which they've done in the past, they will actually bring out and, you know, these will be standalone electric vehicles. So that's a game everybody's in, and they've got to be in, and they're behind in.
Yeah, but if they get at it first and plan their marketing correctly, instead of saying we have an electric crossover, they can come out with something that's an electric crossover, give it a new category name, and just start attacking that. Say you can buy a pickup truck, you can buy an SUV, you can buy a crossover, or you can buy this XYZ.
Yeah.
Right?
I'll believe it when I see it. I hope you're right.
You know, like maybe that's what they're going after. And then, of course, you can buy the sports car. You can buy, the Mustang or something like that, you know, and maybe there's going to be variations of that as well. Maybe there's going to be, I don't know, I hate to say it, maybe there's a four-door Mustang sometime. Maybe there's an EV Mustang at some point, and they're going after the sport and the sport coupe, which is a category that I hate, because why do we have a four-door sport coupe? It's just a Why not we just call it a sports sedan, because sedan says four doors to me, and BMW Mercedes, this drives me nuts. Why have a BMW 6 Series and then a 6 Grand Coupe? It's a coupe, or you guys, coupe.
Coupe.
Coupe. It's got four doors, right? Yeah. That's sedan to me.
But this is the whole point, that people don't buy cars. Nobody wants a sedan, so we're going to sell you a sedan, but call it a coupe.
Right. The endless loop continues.
It's human psychology.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, but that's a category that essentially, I don't know who created that. Maybe Mercedes did with a CLS.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They probably created that category, and BMW got into it. And Audi with an A7?
A7, yeah.
You know, they sort of got into that as well. You know, and it's just like, here's the sedan, but, you know, the seating position is lower and you're sitting a little bit lower in the car. And
you've got no rear headroom.
You get no rear headroom, so it's a backseat for
kids. M5 versus the E63.
Yeah, so these are two cars that we love.
Speak to me.
Yeah, two cars that we love. M5 is making a big change in that they're going to all-wheel drive. which they haven't done before, and an insane amount of horsepower. And because of that, I'm sure there's some sort of two-wheel drive setting, or it does it automatically, and there's some kind of crazy drift mode, because not that anybody does that. You can't sell a sports car without having that kind of stuff in there. But can an M5 now launch with the aggressiveness of a Nissan GTR or R8 or something like that, and compete in this world of super sedans? By the way, super sedans, a category I love. Love the super sedan category. I love the idea of a four-door that's faster than pretty much anything else you can get out there.
You're damn right.
So you've recently got behind the wheel of a couple of these, or your people did?
My people.
Your people.
Dear God. What have I become?
Yeah. Your Edmonds people?
Well, yeah, I'm about to get behind. We've had them, actually, we've got them in the office at the moment for
they're fitting the seat for you now?
Yeah, they're just going to carry me on a...
Thought that was what the conveyor belt was for.
Exactly. So we had them down at our test track yesterday. Both the E63 and an M5 for a video that we're launching in a couple of weeks, May the 25th. I'll give you more details on that later. So we had both of them on down at the Edmonds test track, so we ran some figures on them. I don't have the definitive, we're just crunching some of the data at the moment, but early suggestions suggest that the E63, 0 to 60 in 3.2, quarter of a mile in 11.1, M5, we just found at the moment, we think the M5 is going to be fractionally quicker, but we're talking like a tenth or two.
Yeah. That's what sells.
We're just pulling
that
data
at the moment. You're never going to feel it, but it sells cars.
It sells cars. I mean, both of these, funny, we also had a McLaren 570 Spider came down. McLaren wanted to come down and see our test facilities yesterday, and their PR came down and turned up in a 570 Spider, and I said, look, this is the least powered car we've got on the circuit right now.
Yeah.
The E63 and the M5 got 600 horsepower. Which is crazy, but you're like this, Gobo. One of our test drivers got out and he said, "Do you know what this E63 is?" He said, "Basically, it's a Hellcat in a posh dress."
Nice, I like that description.
A designer suit. It's a Hellcat in a designer suit.
They're all nice. Turbo now, right? Good. Like everything's turbo.
Everything's turbo, and as you say, they've both got rear wheel. They're both all wheel drive, which helps them to launch, which is why you get these crazy 0 to 60 times. But they also both have a rear-wheel drive function. Now, in the Mercedes, it's called drift mode, and you have to sort of go through 20 different buttons and stand on one leg. The M5 is a bit more simple. That's just basic. But both do the same thing. They throw the power to the rear. It's partly about protecting the brand, BMW rear-wheel drive and everything else. And it's partly, as you say, it's about having some fun drifting it around. And down in the test track, we've got this little low-grip circuit, which just allows us to play with cars without destroying tires and putting things
quarter.
In the wall. Exactly. And it was just such a hoot through there. So I've literally sat in them, but I'm going to have a go tomorrow probably in both of them. So that'll be fun.
Okay.
Tell you're looking forward to it, that smile on your face.
Yeah. You know, it's not a terrible – I mean, you know, Edmunds
what a crappy day.
Edmunds is about car showing. We're just as committed to the Eco Sports and the CRVs and the RAV4s, but we do also get to test every car on the market. And, of course, you get excited when a 600-horsepower sedan turns up. But the Mercedes is 300 pounds heavier, so it's quite that's quite a big disadvantage.
Yeah, I'm not surprised though. That's kind of Mercedes has kind of been that way. I mean, you don't get into a Mercedes or a BMW for that matter and expect to
limited
not,
cockpit.
You know, to still have you got to have not just power seats. They got to be heated. They got to be vented. They got to be with all this stuff. And even there's. Excuse me, there's a version of these cars where you're like, oh, we've got a carbon fiber roof. It saves 20 pounds. Yeah, but you've got a 95-pound power seat and I get it. It's a little high up, and, you want the weight down low and whatnot, but it's still kind of gimmicky. I mean, if you add a sunroof to the car and adds 20 pounds, you're going to feel the difference? You're going to notice the difference?
Well, the M5 has got a carbon roof.
Of course.
The E63 hasn't. But what made us laugh, the E63, obviously Mercedes has kind of thought, this thing's pretty heavy. So they've put in these ridiculous race seats. I mean, these feel like they're out of an LMP1 racer. They're so hard when you sit in them, which completely destroys the ethos of that vehicle. Because the idea is, here is a German taxi that is limited to 180 odd miles an hour.
Yeah.
So, but they're cool things. And actually, the E63 looks a lot cooler than the M5. The M5, we have a 540 on our long-term test program. and it looks almost identical to the M5, whereas the E63 looks pretty
aggressive.
Yeah. Aggressive. Yeah. But if you get an M5, you've got to get in a funky color or a bright blue or something like that. Yeah. Otherwise, nobody knows it's an M5. There's this whole topic of vehicle subscriptions I want to get into as well. I want to ask you guys about that. What do you think of this? But first, I'm going to tell you about the Dodge Spring Sales Event. Hurry to the Dodge Spring Sales Event today and become the newest member of the Brotherhood of Muscle. You love that, don't you, Bill?
Oh, yeah.
Check out this lineup. They've got a Dodge Charger. You can own the road and the pump with up to 300 horsepower and 30 miles per gallon. The Dodge Challenger, which is the most affordable V8 in its class. The Dodge Journey, the most powerful three-row all-wheel drive vehicle in its class. The Dodge Durango, which is the most powerful SUV with all-wheel drive availability in its class. I love the theme. Is every one of these is most powerful, most powerful, most powerful. I guess Dodge is on to something. I think they've got a theme here.
And it's working.
You know, they got it done. I feel like the Dodge Challenger, they say most affordable V8 in its class. I love that that's the base V8, and then there's a Hellcat, and then there's a Demon on it. And the Demon still is the most powerful. I don't know what class it's in, but it's still the most powerful. But anyway, your initiation to the Brotherhood of Muscle starts at your local Dodge dealership. Okay. Vehicle subscriptions. You can buy a car, you can lease a car, you can go to your enterprise rental place and get a car. But now we're talking about, BMW, Porsche, or somebody several car companies are launching a subscription-based model that is saying, you pay us a few thousand dollars a month, not inexpensive, and then, you know, you want to drive your M5 for the week, that's fine. You're going to take the kids and go skiing up in Mammoth, just give us a call. We'll swap it out for X5 Amber or something. Why are we doing this, and is it worth it?
That's a good question, because it slightly depends on and people are doing this in very different ways. I think the ethos behind it is we're so used to now with our phones, you pay a subscription, and every 2 years you get a new phone. And so the mentality, it's the same mentality. The issue, but then people are going about it in different ways. So if you look at what Volvo's doing with the XC40, that $600 starts at $600 a month, and that is effectively leasing by another means. So you get the car, but not only do you get the car, you also get the insurance and the warranty. So that is just kind of hassle-free, mm-hmm. Pay your $600 a month, and the car arrives, no down payment, the car arrives, and after a year or two, you can then swap it in for a new Volvo, whatever you like. I like that scheme. We've run the figures on it. It makes sense. It's hassle free. You know, there's much to like about it.
So for Volvo, it makes sense.
For Volvo,
financially,
financially,
it makes sense for the customer.
It's about break even, depending on your insurance, where you sit, and that sort of thing. But it's probably break even. But just taking away the hassle of having to do all that independently and everything else. So we like that. Then you get into the way other people are doing it. So Porsche have a scheme which is either $2,000 a month, and you can get a Cayman, a Boxster, a Macan, or a Cayenne, and sort of the entry-level models. $3,000 a month, and you're into a 911, Cayman, Boxster, Panamera, and just the higher-level things. They're trialing that around Atlanta at the moment. BMW has one, $2,000 a month for sort of, you know, their kind of cooking versions there. Or then $3,700 for the M cars, which we think is nuts. We can't make the figures work. They're only trying it in Nashville. We're kind of interested how many people in Nashville are paying $3,000, not to diss Nashville, but how many people are paying $3,700 a month?
I'm a country music artist. I don't think they'll be driving BMWs.
It almost feels like they've set it up to fail. We can't make the figures work at all. What this does show, then, this is quite an interesting point. We were talking about this yesterday, is how much people don't. We talk about like true cost of ownership, and people don't appreciate how much a car actually costs, because you think about it as a lease rate, then your insurance, and mentally these are all different figures. And when you start to add all this up, it's pretty scary what a car actually costs. So you look at, say,
convenience is great, but crunch the numbers at the end.
Look, all cars to me are expensive these days.
Yeah.
Even the cheapest cars are expensive. I bought a 93 Cobra in 93, and the thing was like 20 grand. You can't buy anything for 20 grand anymore. And that was the top of the chain back then. I'm like, cars are expensive.
And we worked it out. So Cadillac offer $1,800 a month. You're allowed to change the car 18 times a year. So this is basically like an app on your phone. You click on the app. So then, in theory, you want a different car, and then somebody brings it to your door. I'm not convinced, because it's just, A, how does the company manage the fleet? So if you want your CTSV...
That's the first question.
And Matt's got the CTSV, and you go, boy, we're gonna, you hit your app on the phone, can I have my CTSV? No, the moderator's got it. You're not a happy guy. Yeah. So then do they have to have CTSVs for everybody? The next problem is, can you be bothered with a hassle? I mean, even if they're bringing it to your door, you've still got to think about it. You've got to book it in. You've got to get your stuff out of one car. You've got to make sure that... And then there's other little facts as well, like Cadillac, if you take your dog, the dog's got to be in a carrier because that's one of the conditions. So no sort of dog out there with its head out the window. So there's all these little things. Now, I think it'll work for some people. The Volvo is dead simple. Used cars, companies like Fair and Canvas, but that's like a lease model. It's like a hassle-free lease model. The subscription stuff that the high-end manufacturers are going for, like Porsche and Mercedes are going to introduce them as well, are all about swapping and changing. I've got a 911. I want to try a Boxster. I want to try a Panamera. I don't know. I'm far from convinced.
You know, we get to drive different press cars and stuff all the time, and those loaners are usually about a week at a time. But I'll tell you, you're right on. The hassle of – I mean – look, it's a gift. We get to do it. It's super fun. But trying to schedule it and then meet somebody and get the car and then, you know, of course, you've got to create content with it, right? But then, you know, when you get it back and did you forget your garage door opener and all this stuff, like, it's really not that easy to do. I know some journalists are super aggressive. And they're like, I don't even need a car. I'm just going to drive press cars every day for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much in a different car every night because that's part of my job. But you're right. The sunglasses.
Yeah, but who books them?
Pam?
Who books them?
Oh, one of
one of your underlings.
one of his people.
The same people
one
are getting their seat ready in the BMW.
Right?
Oh, yeah. Please, can we just cut this, Chris?
You know, it's,
you have to endure some of the pain too.
Yeah, it's a lot of work. Look, I've been reaching out recently. There's a couple. I reached out to BMW and say, "Hey, man, we'd love to get on the M5 at some point." And they said, "Yeah, it's super booked up. We'll probably get something done in June, and let's get it done." And Bill, I know you're interested in the Jeep Trackhawk, right? It's a badass Jeep. It's got a Hellcat engine in it. I want to see what a $100,000 Jeep Cherokee looks like, you know. And I asked. They said, "Sure, we'll send you something to drive. I want to send one down to you, but they said it's going to take, you know, 4 to 6 weeks."
Wait for no man.
Just you know, because it's just booked. It's like, yeah, you know, they're like, Edmunds has it first, and so you got to wait for them to be done with it. So I understand the strategy behind you guys also buying cars, at, you know, for your for your long term fleet. But
well, the other good thing about buying cars is then, you know, it's what everybody talks about, and it's something we talk about, press and, you know, all this fake news and everything. I mean, we buy the cars, we are honest, we're straightforward, you know, it's a very straightforward transaction. We've just, you know, we have our Tesla Model 3 is proving an absolute nightmare. It just constantly keeps breaking, the electronics keep giving up, it's constantly in and out of the shop. We bought that car and we're telling it as it is.
Yeah.
So if you come to our site and look up the long-term Model 3, it's quite an entertaining read. We love the car, it just keeps breaking.
And you know my strategy on that is, like, I'm a fan of the cars, but again, he's just crowdfunding one thing after the next. You know, the Model 3s are just getting delivered now, and there was the announcement, I think, yesterday that said, hey, we're gonna do a dual mode or dual engine Model 3, so we're going to start taking deposits soon. I was like, all right, so you need that money to go build the Model 3 or fix the Model 3 that they have been delivering. I get it. Building a car company is not easy to do. It's tough to do. And it takes a lot of money, but...
Well, also, you burn a lot of money if you keep replacing screens and replacing wing mirror. You know, if you don't if you don't build them right, the cost is in the recalls and the shop time.
Yeah. Everybody was giving Fisker a hard time years ago when, you know, the cars weren't doing that well and he couldn't raise the money to keep that thing alive. Look, the smartest thing that guy did was go, hey, this stuff's too expensive. You know, I want to do other stuff, but... I tried it, and it's a rough game. Without a big partner, we can't get this done. But anyway, so to finish up on this lease thing, look, I make a payment on my iPhone because that's how you get a $1,200 iPhone for not a lot of money every month. And $3,700 a month for an M-Series BMW seems like a lot if all I can do is swap it out every couple of weeks for a different M.
Yeah.
Right? It's kind of – it's a tough sell.
They made it as easy as one being one mysteriously appearing right in front of you, it's still not worth $3,700 a month.
It's not. And I'm sure there's going to be a process where you can like just plan ahead and book these things a week or two in advance. That's the only way you're going to get it on time. But it's not going to be like you hit a button on your phone and an hour later an X5 shows up. Like, it's just not going to be able to do it that way. You're right. They're just not going to have the inventory.
Making the transaction may be seamless, but having it actually come through, I don't think is going to be anything close.
And the other thing is the psychology of saying, actually, we did the figures on some of the Porsche stuff, and actually $2,000 or $3,000 a month makes a lot more sense than the M car. When you actually add up depreciation insurance and everything else, you realize it actually makes you think how expensive. Because people don't think about, we're talking about the people that depreciation.
Yeah.
You buy the car, the money's spent. But when you factor in depreciation, when you look at this, you think actually $3,000 a month for a 911, be able swapping in and out 911s, you think actually this kind of makes sense. Then you think, God, I mean, is it really that expensive to run a Porsche? But it's getting up that way,
Yeah, but the Porsche.
You pay for your enjoyment.
Yeah.
Porsche's. Or at least the 911s, they seem to hold their value a little bit better. And for that reason, you can often get pretty aggressive lease rates. I'm sure if you crunch the numbers on a 911 or a 911S, fully loaded, that's $150,000. And then you take a Porsche 911 Turbo with no options, and it's $150,000. They're roughly the same price. I bet the lease payment on that turbo is less than the fully loaded 911 because that turbo would hold its value a little bit more. And if you just did it based on depreciation, you'd get a lower lease rate on the turbo.
Lease rates always give you a very different the retail cost of a car is almost irrelevant if you start leasing. The cost of a lease is skews the market so much. Interestingly, we were talking about going to the McLaren event last week. They were telling me that you can lease a 570 Spider, and they've got a lot of people coming in leasing McLarens now. People are just getting out of 911s and and they were saying that you can lease a 570 Spider for around $2,500 a month. So if you think of the Porsche scheme at $3,000, you can have a McLaren, which you're going to lease for around $2,500. Then obviously you've got insurance stuff, but so that's you're sort of in the ballpark.
Does anybody lease a Pagani Huayra?
Give me the McLaren number, please.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
I'll take my 10%.
Yeah, it's fine.
I mean, it's so confusing for me these days. I just buy used cars and pay cash, because it's, of course I got to buy a bunch of crap that's cheap.
But once you take it off the showroom floor, 10% is completely gone.
It's gone, right? It's gone.
No matter what it is, but for 99% of these vehicles, absolutely.
Yeah. I think you can at least break even on a Demon and a Shelby GT350, and certainly some of the exotic cars you're getting in Ferrari. Something that there's a list involved, Look, Ken Ligenfelder goes and he's bought a million Ferraris in his lifetime. So when he's on a list for a LaFerrari and he waits a year and he gets the car, that's free money.
Yeah.
Right? You're on that list. You've earned it. You give him $1.5 million, you get the car, and Monterey in 6 months, it's worth $2.5 million, right?
It's a process.
The best value car on sale at the moment, McLaren Senna.
Really?
Double your money instantly.
Yeah, no double your money. I mean,
if only we had access to the vehicle and $2 million, whatever it is.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, look, arguably the Ford GT, which I drove and I loved, if you're on the list, you're going to double your money. Because if you wait the 2 years, if you're not John Cena and you wait the 2 years and you go and you sell it, people pay $1 million for it.
I got an interesting Ford GT story.
Yeah.
We got time.
Yeah, we got a couple minutes and then we'll wrap up.
Well, I'm in a quandary here. A friend of mine has asked me to participate in a rally in June driving his Monster Energy Ford GT.
Okay. The new Ford GT, the previous gen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Kurt Busch.
Yeah.
And there are a number of issues I have with that. First and foremost, getting into it. But most importantly, it's like an invitation to a jail cell. You know, I mean, you have to be realistic about these things. I was the, you know, we did the Bull Run rally, and I was in the 750 horsepower, you know, Bull Run Mustang. And I was the first guy over the bridge out of New York City, and I was also the first guy to get a ticket. So
yeah,
I don't have good track record with those type of events. And the car is gorgeous, and it is an eye catcher as it is, but it's wrapped in Monster Energy wrap.
Yeah. And it's awesome. So you want to drive it like
it's thing's awesome. Awesome, right? But you know what a horrible. But
you're gonna,
circumstance.
But you're going to do it, though, right?
I don't know. I'm toying with it right now.
I'm the same height as you, and I mean you're 50% bigger than me, but we're the same height. I looked up your spec, and you are literally.
You looked up his spec.
I looked up his specs, and he's literally. You're literally 50% heavier than I am. But
give me the bad news. I already know the answer.
Yeah, but we do. I've driven it. I drove it last year in the U.S. I can drive. You'll fit. I think you'll be okay.
Will there be able? Will a passenger be able to fit in it?
But shoulder wise.
Yeah, I think you'll be okay. I mean, the seats are obviously pretty sculptured, but yeah. I think you'll be okay because you move the pedals away, so the seat is fixed in those things.
Yeah.
And you know, Matt will move the pedals this way. You'll move the pedals the other way, and I think you'll be okay. I think you'll be okay.
Okay, there goes the first strike off the list.
You probably won't get a won't get a helmet on though. That's not going to happen.
No.
Adam Carolla had. John Cena on Adam Carolla's show. He called in, and Adam, I talked to Adam ahead of time. I was like, if you got Cena calling in, you got to ask him about the Ford GT thing. Like, you got to figure out what's going on.
And he
said, Ford is suing me. And he said that he did kind of fit in there. And he goes, you're going to have to go to court. And Adam was telling him, he goes, I'm going to tell you how to win. This is how you win, is you bring the seat from the Ford GT into the courtroom, and before you walk in, you do about 50 push-ups and a bunch of curls. Then you go and you sit in that seat, and you say, I sold the car because I don't fit. It's the whole OJ glove thing. It's like the glove doesn't fit. Like, that's how you go and get out of this lawsuit and go, I can't fit in the car. They didn't tell me this ahead of time. I'm out. But actually, I think Cena actually fit in the car, and he didn't have much to say about his whole deal. But
the Gold Rush Rally.
Oh, yeah. Gold Rush. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where they go.
Think anybody will recognize me in that car?
Oh, yeah, we're looking at a picture of it. It does say Monster Energy Drink. It is black and bright green. It looks kind of badass.
Kind of.
It looks sweet.
Now I can fit in it.
I kind of feel like you should do it.
It kind of looks like it's that way.
Just don't blame me if you get there and realize you don't really fit.
Yeah, I mean, don't drink Monster Energy Drink.
Okay, no, this is on recording, so you're going to be held liable.
All right, guys, we're gonna wrap up. I appreciate you all listening. As usual, we'd love to get some feedback from you guys. Send us in some questions. We'd love to hear from you. Email us at carcastshow@gmail.com. Follow us on all of our social media. Alistair's on Instagram at Weaver Alistair, and he's on Twitter as Alistair Weaver. There you go.
So nice.
Some sort of identity crisis he's having, but there he is. He's on both of those. Of course, check out Edmunds.com. By the time you're listening to this, you're probably going to be able to check out some of the videos of the M5 versus E63 AMG. So we love those guys over there. Thank you for coming in, Alistair.
Pleasure.
You can follow me at Moderator. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, all at Moderator. And Goldberg, I've got it in front of me. You want me to do it? Here's the notes.
Shoot.
Follow Goldberg. He's Goldberg and Goldberg Garage at Twitter, on Twitter, and Goldberg95 and Goldberg's Garage on Instagram. So follow those accounts.
Don't ask me.
You know, and if you get a chance, swing on over to iTunes, give us a nice review, let us know what you guys think of the show. We're going to keep plugging away. We want your comments to help us mold this thing. So, you know, for Alistair and for Bill Goldberg, thank you guys. Until next time, keep the air in the spare and the bag in the wheel.